the volume.
What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast, back at it again. Another just insane football night. The football game wasn't really that crazy till the end, but just enormous, earth-shattering college football news, which we will jump into right off the top. Football right now, the business of football, college and pro, is like hedge funds. Is like Wall Street. I mean, the money getting thrown around right now. We'll talk about Lincoln Riley's contract a little bit later. Brian Kelly, $15 million potentially a year to go to Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. Don't know if I saw that one coming. I will give my thoughts right off the top. Russell Wilson, like, Seattle, it's over. It's pretty crazy how fast it ended. Dive in a little bit there. Lincoln Riley, some thoughts on the Rams-Packers. Some thoughts on Cliff Kingsbury in Oklahoma. Just a lot going on around the league. Brandon Staley going through some struggles right now with the Chargers. We'll dive into a lot of other football stuff. And then, of course, the Middlecoff mailbag, at John Middlecoff is the Instagram. Slide up into those direct messages and get your question answered here on the show. Also, if you could leave a review, Three and Out Podcast would greatly appreciate it. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. That also helps. Share it with your friends. I record the podcast, or, you know, the meat of the podcast, like the meat of the podcast you'll hear today beside the opening stuff, usually during the day on Mondays and Thursdays. On Mondays, you can find it on the YouTube channel at 2 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. And on Thursdays, you can find it 11 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, volume YouTube. Just producing content, because that's what we do. Talk for a living. So we record live on YouTube. Big story of the night, though, is Brian Kelly leaving. And if you've listened to me for a while, you know my philosophical beliefs on regions matter. And there are outliers of people that in the pros, it does not matter. No one cares where Sean McVay is from, LaFleur is from, Bill Belichick is from, Andy Reid is from Los Angeles, coach with the Eagles and the Chiefs, right? Sean Payton, I have no clue where Sean Payton's from. Chicago, Illinois? Went to Romo's school. I don't know. Pete Carroll's from like Stockton, California. Coaches in Seattle. This is the first year he's been a disaster. Like, it's been fine. The pros do not matter. In college football, in my opinion, for the majority of guys, it matters. And I think no region it matters more than the South. If you are not one of them, it's hard if anything goes wrong. And it's difficult in general. One thing the SEC has become, and I think the Big Ten is right behind them, is the NFL light. The money is so big. There is so much on the line. There is no time for you to be bad. So if you are struggling, you will not last long. And here's the thing with Brian Kelly. He's from Massachusetts. His college coaching career started at Grand Valley State, which is in Michigan. Then he went to Central Michigan. Then he went to Cincinnati. When I was a GA at Fresno State in 2009, we played his Cincinnati Bearcat team, Nippert Stadium. That was the team that went undefeated and led him to the Notre Dame job. I remember thinking, we had better players. We had more NFL guys. They were good. Brian Kelly can coach. He is legit. His resume speaks for itself. The guy is a winner. But a lot of guys have been winners and gone to regions where they are outsiders and not excelled, especially the South. I saw with my guy Jim McElwain, who went to Florida and had success. But at his core, Jim McElwain, more of a West Coast guy, was never viewed as an insider. You know who are the Southern guys? Dabo, from the South. Kirby, where do you think he's from? Jimbo, take a guess. Nick Saban, coal miner's kid. Actually, his dad was owned a gas station, but was from West Virginia. And you could argue West Virginia, from where I'm sitting, I consider that part of the South. Those guys survive in that mix. Now, Lane has somehow immersed himself in the culture and had success. But I think it's very risky. Now, I understand and I admire Brian Kelly. He cannot win a national championship in Notre Dame. He knows that. The evidence is in. Now with the way things are going, it's not possible. in 2021 to win a national championship at Notre Dame. He knows the only way that he can win a national championship is go to LSU. Now, they paid him a ton of money, but I give him credit for taking the risk because he could have stayed at Notre Dame for another 5-10 years. Could have retired the Notre Dame Fighting Irish coach, but he took a risk. And listen, it's never, these breakups are never easy. It went viral the night that the text or the Slack chain he sent his players. He's going to get, you know, made fun of and embarrassed for it. But listen, this is big boy business. And now the transfer portal, if you don't fucking like it, leave. I don't want to hear any players complain. Like, you can leave now at any moment. And you're getting paid above board and below the table. Now, Notre Dame, I don't think they're really cheating. And I think that's a big reason why, like, he knows he can't cheat there. And I'm not saying he's going to cheat at LSU, but you're allowed to. And listen, again, and I'll talk about it later, like, I am not anti-cheating. Because cheating are arbitrary rules set by these losers in the NCAA. I'm cool with doing whatever it takes to win, and that's what they do in the SEC. And here's what I know about LSU. That team is going to be stacked with talent. Now, is Brian going to be able to resonate with those guys? He was not getting a lot of players like that at his program. They were just recruiting a different player at Notre Dame than they are at LSU. But I know this for a fact. Brian Kelly can coach. He can really coach. Will the culture embrace him? I don't know. Will he have to have immediate success? And maybe he can. Maybe he can win right away. But it's just, I didn't see it coming. Again, didn't see the Lincoln Riley thing coming. Didn't see this coming. There are huge domino effects. Notre Dame and Oklahoma are two of the better jobs in the country. They're not USC. They're not LSU. Oklahoma's not far away from that. But Notre Dame's, you know, probably like a top 15 job. Because again, doesn't pay a premium. I read, and I don't know if this is correct, Brian Kelly was making like $2 or $3 million. I don't think Brian Kelly was making this astronomical amount of money that some of these other guys are making. Now, I'm sure it's private school. They can do different things. It's not like he was poor. But him leaving was a pretty big wow moment on Monday night. Just this, I love the business of football. I truly do. Like, if you've listened to me long enough, you know I like the business of football more than the X's and O's. I enjoy the coaching and the coaching drama and the coaching movement as much as anything in the sport that I talk about for a living. And it doesn't get any better than the last 2 days. I've been saying this over and over. I just don't see how Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson are back on this team. And you could say, well, Middlecoff, he's under contract for $15 million. Like, it's over. It is over. And it ended quickly. Because the Seattle Seahawks have not had a season of the last decade less than 9-7. They haven't just won. They have consistently kicked ass. In 2020, I know this seems like a long time ago, they won the NFC West by multiple games. They hosted a playoff game. They are currently drafting, well, they don't have their pick. The Jets do very, very highly in the top five. Incredible trade. Jamal Adams, while I appreciate his physical nature, celebrates for a guy that loses a lot in the league. But Russell Wilson is clearly not the same after this injury. And if he's not going to be a top five player in the NFL, they're going to go 5-12. And that seems like where they're headed. Now, as a Niner guy, I would say next week, I don't expect the Niners just go and beat them. Like, that game's, Seattle will score 30 points in that game just because they always do when they play the Niners. But their season's done. It's over. Like, it became official tonight. And it was pretty close. I mean, I've seen Seattle win that game, I don't know, 30 times in the last 5 years. They play in that game every other week for the last, you know, 6-7 years with Russell post LOB, and they win them all the time. I thought they were going to drive the field, score, and win it in overtime. But he threw a pick. Feels like the magic is just a little gone. And it feels like it's over for Russ. I also thought a cool, just, you know, inside football, a little nugget. They mentioned this on Monday Night Football that Ron Rivera, as his team's winning, and they're showing some heart and some fight, and Heinicke is, you know, a fun little player. He's probably a really good backup. I don't know if he's a true starting player. Ron Rivera told Greasy and Riddick, every single week, the scouts give him a breakdown of every draftable college player. Like, I love that. That's pretty cool. Now, I don't know what changes week to week, but here's what you know. When you do not have a quarterback in the NFL, you do everything, every waking moment, to try to find one. That's the trade market, evaluating players in the NFL, and looking high and low and digging deep, because everyone knows the top quarterbacks, on which guy you would like and which guy you would want. And here's what I know about Ron Rivera and Mayhew's now their, you know, general manager. They're trying. It's just very difficult. There's an element of luck. I mean, think about Seattle. Their last decade, like, a lot of it was luck-oriented. Now, John Schneider loved Russell Wilson, but they still drafted him in the third round. It's not like they took Bruce Irvin in the first of that draft, right? So there was a huge element of luck even getting him on the team, and it changed all their fortunes. It made Pete Carroll infinitely richer. It made John Schneider, you know, a decade-long general manager and also rich. It made a lot of players on that team rich. It's been very lucrative for you get it right. But when you don't get it right and you don't have one, like, it's not like the Washington football team hasn't got it right. They haven't had a chance. They haven't been high enough in the draft to draft a guy. They've just kind of been in no man's land. And when you're in no man's land, no matter how hard you try, no matter how hard your scouts are beating the bushes and going in schools and watching extra tape and making extra phone calls, you need a little luck on your side. You really do. And there might be a chance. I mean, hell, if somehow Washington football team wins 7-8 games, they're not going to be drafting that high again. And there's not even that many quarterbacks in the draft. Now, maybe there's a guy, you know, someone's trash, another man's treasure. Maybe there's a guy in this draft they can draft in the second round and becomes their Derek Carr, right? Or Jimmy Garoppolo. But more than likely, they're not going to find a Russell Wilson. And really, you would say, actually, more than likely, they're going to find nobody. And they're just going to have this Heineke, you know, just revolving door. I guess they had Fitzmagic and guys like that. And then they'll just be in no man's land. Because that's typically what happens for teams without a quarterback that don't get the opportunity to draft high enough. But I thought it was cool that Rivera's pretty locked in. He's trying, you know? And I think a lot of us fans on the couch that are getting mad at our team because we're passionate, we want to see a team be good, we want to see better players. The guys are trying. I say it all the time. No matter how much you, and if you're listening to this, you probably like football, how much you think you like football. I mean, I do this for a living. And I, you know, when I worked in the NFL, I thought I liked football. People I worked around that are now GMs and head coaches and Coach Reed and Veach and Howie, they like football so much more than you do. They're addicted to it. They think about it all the time. And they do everything humanly possible to try to improve. And sometimes it's just, there's not an option. And it sucks, but just the way the cookie crumbles in the sport of football. Okay, I wasn't going to start with this, but it kind of hit me, and I just saw some breaking news of the contract details of Lincoln Riley. And Adam Schefter, one thing I didn't talk about on the podcast for Monday was Schefter's tweet about Cliff Kingsbury, and I think there's a couple angles here. And let's just start with, it's one of the great lines in the history of TV shows. I'll keep it, you know, PG-13 here. When Axelrod said, "What is the point of having F you money if you never say F you?" What is the point of having all this cash? You can use money as resources. And an institution like USC has so much freaking money, it's stupid. And anytime that they really want to bust it out and use it to their benefit, and they have it in a long, long time. They've had Clay Helton as the head coach, and they've, you know, just kind of hung out in the slow lane of mediocrity. And they finally used it. So let's start with what it took to get Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma to USC. $110 million. He had multiple homes in Norman. According to several people that I know that around the program, and actually one manages like Lincoln's finances, he had just built a 12,000 square foot home in Norman. Now you put that bad boy in you know, in San Jose or Malibu, it's a $15 million home. Norman, it might be $4 million, but 12,000 square foot home in Norman. Not many people are going to be in the market for that. USC said, "Don't worry, Lincoln. We will buy both your homes. We will purchase them for $500,000 over asking on both." So that's a free $1 million bonus, and he gets rid of both his houses. Then they're going to purchase him because you're like, what about the real estate in California? Well, yeah, for most people, it's really expensive. For the super rich, line item. Lincoln, we got you $6 million home in Los Angeles. On us. They're also giving him and his family an unlimited use of the private jet. So, yeah, you need it for recruiting, or you need it to, you know, go to Florida and hang out for the weekend. You want to go to Augusta. You want to go to San Diego. Do whatever the hell you want. We got you. And I give USC credit. They utilize their cash. They utilize their money. And they went above and beyond. And to most people, this will be, whoa, oh my God. USC is a multi-billion dollar operation. Billions upon billions of dollars. this isn't that much. They should have done this years ago, but I applaud them. And ultimately, we all have a price. Every one of us. And obviously, they got a lot going for them. Anyone that's ever hung out in Manhattan Beach or Malibu, it's pretty cool. It's Santa Monica. It doesn't suck. So, and ultimately, he's going to win there. And the University of Oklahoma, I've seen a lot of people freaking out, their fans. I've had people DM me, John, bring me some good news. I understand them being pretty distraught. Anyone who's ever been in a relationship and not being expected and someone leaves you or has a breakup that you don't see coming, we've all known those people that get in a bad divorce that kind of comes out of left field. It can devastate you. No one around the Oklahoma program thought this guy was going to leave because they could pay him. They were winning and everyone was laughing like he's not going to go to LSU. And then he comes out and says he's not going to go to LSU, but we all got a price. And listen, I gave some advice to a buddy a while ago. I think the number one thing we all have to do in life is trust our gut. You can ask people for advice. You can ask mentors for advice. You can ask your parents for advice. You can ask your significant other for advice. But truly only you know the circumstances of everything in your professional life. And I think deep down, whether it's right or wrong, and we're not always going to be right with our decisions, you have to trust your gut. And I think it's fair to say that Lincoln's gut told him to make this move. So they paid him for it. And Oklahoma should be very, very proud. And they're lucky to have a guy like Bob Stoops, who's one of the great coaches of the last 20, 30 years, still around the program and still able to kind of stand up, be the interim coach, just be able to stabilize in times of turmoil. We talk about it all the time with why is Belichick worth so much? Why is Andy Reid worth so much? Why is Nick Saban? During tough times, you have a guy like Bob Stoops when the sea gets a little rocky, he can man the sails and he can just get you to land. Now, your next coach might not be as good as Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley's, kind of a rare guy, right? He's got this. I text someone this today. He's got the swag of McVay. He's got the X and O's in Kyle, but he can recruit like he's Pete Carroll and he's young. he's the best of all the worlds. He's kind of got it all going for him. And he runs this spread offense, but it's got a physical element to it. We'll get into McVay, who's gotten away from that, and the Packers have got into it. Physicality always, always works in football. Even as the game spreads out more and more, you have to be physical at the point of attack, and Lincoln's teams have been offensively. Now, hopefully, they can recruit those guys defensively. And the money was outrageous. Now, Cliff Kingsbury, who was rumored, he's going into his last year of his contract in 2022. And the Cardinals are in somewhat of a tough position. They've gone all in on Cliff. And it's finally worked this season. It's finally worked. After going 8-8, they've taken a big step. They're 9-2. They're coming off a bye. They're going to the playoffs. Now, with the Rams kind of falling apart, they even should win the NFC West. They are going to host a playoff game. Still a lot of football left to be played. It's not out of the realm of possibility that they get the number one overall seat. But he's only done it 1 year. But I don't think the Cardinals have a choice. They have to pay him. Here's the problem. The going rate for coaches. I mean, Lincoln just got one of the biggest contracts in the history of football, right? Even John Gruden got $100 million. And as someone texted me today, they were like, I heard you talking about the taxes with Lincoln Riley. Like, don't think for a second all this money's going to be in W-2s. I'm like, yeah, I didn't mean it like that. Because you're right. It's not like Lincoln Riley's W-2 salary will be like $3 million. Every year, the $10 million, it's going to get siphoned to entities probably in Vegas. We avoid the taxes like the plague out here on the West Coast. It really starts with the tech industry. They're the best at it. They might talk like they, about society, but they love their money. And anyone out on the West Coast making big money in California, you don't like to pay this government that, let's face it, tries to rob you. I mean, our taxes are just astronomically larger than any other state. And it's not, we got a lot of problems. It's not like it's fixing anything. But what do you do with Cliff? Like, how much do you give him, right? Am I giving him $60 million? I don't feel that. Can I give him like a three-year contract? Hell, I'd even give him $10 million a year. Can I give him 3 years, $30 million? Would he accept that? I don't know. It's a tough spot, but I think it's fair to say that he's not going anywhere. I watched the Packers and the Rams game today. And two things really stood out to me. They're polar opposite operations right now, even though both the coaches come from the Shanahan tree. And in theory, they run the same offense, even though their offensive have both kind of morphed with their new quarterbacks. Even though I guess LaFleur's had Rodgers the whole time, but McVay has adapted his offense to Stafford. And I think the number one thing that stands out to me about the Los Angeles Rams, and I said this a week ago when they played the 49ers, is they've lost their physicality. They've become this like spread offense passing attack. When they were having success, they would run it down your throat. Now with Matt Stafford, they've tried to spread it out, and they've become a soft team. And the Niners hit them right in the teeth. The Green Bay Packers did the same exact thing. They've become soft. Now, I think Stafford has played much worse the previous weeks, right? The game against Tennessee, he was atrocious. The game against the 49ers was even worse. I actually didn't think he was that bad in this game. The pick six he threw, which it's never good to be on a list with Matt Stafford. Three straight games with a pick six. First guy to do it since Matt Stafford, like, you know, a little over, I guess, less than a decade ago. Great play by the defensive back. But they've become soft. Even though they do have some physical players. I mean, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, these guys are physical players. But, you know, McVay is leaning all into the passing game. And when I watch them play, they don't resemble the team that I used to know when they were kicking everyone's ass. And ultimately, the pressure on Matt Stafford, I said this over and over, he does not have the experience in these big games, which is understandable. He's never played in them. You don't play in big games when you play for the Lions. It just doesn't happen. He's already played like five big games this year for the Rams. It's probably five bigger games than he's played in the last 5 years with the Lions. And now there's a ton of pressure on him, even though he's used to playing Green Bay. When he's playing Green Bay, he's never supposed to win. Right? I mean, the Rams, that's a game that they think they should win, especially coming off a bye. Aaron Rodgers is clearly on a different level, but to me, the number one thing that stands out, and really the Packers, the biggest difference between the LaFleur Packers and the Mike McCarthy Packers is a physical run game. And when you have a physical run game, it permeates into your team and you become a physical football team. And their team is way more physical, defensively as well, because you practice against it. A.J. Dillon, stud. They can hand it to him and he says, listen, we are going to run it down your throat. And they did. And A.J. Dillon trucked Taylor Rapp on this one play, but he adds an element of physicality which really works as the season goes on. Because in December, when you play for Green Bay, you play outside in the cold, you can't just sling it around all game. Even if you have one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league, and Aaron Rodgers is the best player in the sport. Sometimes I hear all these people talking like, who's the MVP? Who's the MVP? I would just give it to Rodgers. And if I hear one more media person be like, well, he doesn't deserve it after his immunization comment. Who'd he lie to? The media? Like, I'm sorry, you guys aren't the gatekeepers anymore. Those days ended years ago. You know, media landscapes change. They're very bitter that they don't get to set the tone for society anymore like they used to back in the day. You know, it's all changed. But the team knew, the league knew, and all of his teammates knew. The media just didn't know. So I'm sorry, like everyone that mattered, his teammates, his team, and the league, they were all privy to the information of where Rodgers' vaccine status stood. But if I was voting for the MVP, and a lot of people ask me, like, Middlecoff, what are your votes? I don't vote on this, so I don't even think that much of it. But to me, he's been the best player in the league for 2 years running. I said it last week when he played the Vikings. It was like they got thoroughly outplayed, but Rodgers was just a monster in that game. And he was the reason the game was even close. He was just fantastic. So I think the Packers are, they're banged up right now. But if they can get healthy down the stretch, they're going to be tough, man. They really are. And to me, right now, heading into this stretch, like I think he's going to win the MVP again. Now, the media is not going to be happy, and they will not want to vote for him. But they were, again, they were the only people that didn't know. I guess the fans too, but it's not a fan vote. Let's go to the Cowboys. And the game that they lost on Thursday, I give the Raiders a lot of credit. I thought they would fold. I thought they would get their ass kicked. Derek, you know, in front of 38 million people, the most watched game in 30 years, he probably had one of his better games as a pro, especially factoring in Waller gets KO'd. You know, the Henry Ruggs is out. He's basically doing it with Renfro and Deshaun. Deshaun, who has complete ownage over the Cowboys. If Deshaun played the Cowboys every week, his career would go down as like Randy Moss or Jerry Rice. But I think the Cowboys had an opportunity this week and they blew it. And the Jones family should have stepped in. Is that McCarthy tested positive for COVID. And he's not going to be able to coach
they play this Thursday night game, right? Because they played on Thursday, Thanksgiving, but then they're just playing this Thursday night game against the Saints. So really, both those teams are working on a normal schedule. McCarthy's out. And he named Dan Quinn the coach. Like, I've seen Dan Quinn coach. I've seen him be the head coach. Why don't we give Kellen Moore a run? We've seen these other teams have elite assistant coaches and blown it by letting them walk out the door. Well, your offensive coordinator, who they're struggling a little bit right now, and Dak's not playing great. And I think I said this last week, whenever your quarterback is a $40 million guy and he starts struggling, you're going to be in trouble. They need Dak to be, you know, a fringe top five guy given the money they're paying him. And he's been a little up and down. I don't think he's been the same since his injury. But I would say this, if I was Jerry Jones, I'd say I want Kellen Moore to be the interim coach. Now, of course, McCarthy doesn't want to do that because that would, you know, I'm sure he'd be insecure about the situation. But in any other industry, right, I can just speak to the industries I've been in. If I was sick as a West Coast scout, I got sick and I wasn't able to hit schools, they would send someone to do those schools. If in radio, when I would take vacation, they would put a fill-in in those spots. A lot of times it would be to see how good the guy is. In late night shows forever, when the guy would take, and you see this on, you know, network television, when someone takes vacation, they use a fill-in. And a lot of times it's a younger up-and-coming person who maybe they think's not ready for the job, but they get to see their opportunity, get some live reps. I flipped on, it's guilty pleasure, this Netflix show about I think it's called Sunset, Selling Sunset. It's these just a bunch of babes just selling real estate in LA, led by this little guy that owns this real estate company, little bald rich guy. It's a terrible but pretty entertaining show. And one of the ladies is having a baby. So she's not able to do her area in Malibu. And the guy's like, I'm going to hire this young up-and-comer as a fill-in until you're able to get back. And of course, she doesn't want the lady to come in. But of course he is. He wants to see, hell, maybe I can find the same employee at a cheaper rate. Maybe I can find at paying the same amount of money. Maybe she's better. You always want the opportunity to get a live rep. We do it with the players all the time. When a guy gets sick, when a guy gets injured, the next man up. Well, what happens every once in a while, the next man up is better than the other guy. And what happens when that happens? You get Wally Pipped, right? And you find out, wow, this guy's more talented. You are going to lose Kellen Moore this offseason. He's going to get a head coaching job. So you might as well at least make the decision. I understand Jerry's old school. He's older. He's very loyal to his coaches. He probably likes Mike McCarthy. But this was a fantastic opportunity. I've seen Dan Quinn coach. We've all seen it. For the last, 6-7 years, Atlanta. We know exactly who Dan Quinn is the head coach. Why not have been like, hey, Mike, you're out. We're going to make this decision. Kellen, you're going to be the coordinator, but you're also going to be the head coach. Let's just get a live rep. Let's get a live look. Happened once upon a time with Dak, right? Tony Romo hurts his back. Kellen Moore, I think, broke his ankle. Dak happened. And then it was like, oh my God, you found your quarterback. Why not do the same thing with a coach? Are you okay with losing Kellen Moore this offseason? Because you weren't last season when you paid him all that money to keep him. So I thought this was an opportunity. I completely understand why McCarthy wanted Dan Quinn to be the head coach. But I thought this was a mistake. I really did. And it's on the Jones family. They should have overruled this one. You can say it would have made it weird or whatever. But let's face it, it's going to get a little weird. Cowboys have not been playing good football. I mean, they've lost 3 or 4 games. And that loss, and I get the refs were terrible. But you can't lose to the Raiders. You can't put yourself in that position. That can't happen. Not given what they were going through. Not on a short week, not at home. That was a horrendous loss. And I've been thinking about this for a while. Is when you invest, and this is what I said about Dak all the time, and I might be wrong about Dak. I'm giving him a little bit of some wiggle room this last month that is coming off the calf injury. He's not the same. Because I thought early in the season he was really good. Now, a lot of people have slid into my direct messages and been like, look at him historically. He feasts on the crappy teams, and against the better teams, he can be a little hit or miss. Now, I've seen him play good football against bad teams, so I would push back on that a little bit. But I do understand, before we anoint this guy as a top five guy, you have to do it year in, year out. Like, what makes Aaron Rodgers one of the greatest players of all time? He's been doing it for a decade. What makes Tom Brady the GOAT? He's been doing it for 2 decades. Peyton Manning did it for 15 years. You know, Drew Brees did it forever. Steve Young, Joe Montana. To be a great player, you have to do it over and over and over again. It's what makes great players at all these other positions, right? Every single year you answer the bell and you bring it. You can't just, you can be a flash in the pan or have a good year and a half. Can you do it for a decade? It's not very easy. It's not easy to do that in any business. Consistently answer the bell every day, every month, every year. It's hard to maintain that level of play, that level of focus, that level of intensity. It's very difficult in any industry. And Dak has been a little wishy-washy. One guy who has gotten a lot of heat over the years, and I've kind of turned the corner on him. I've been like, you know, one guy I was like, yeah, I would never have wanted as my quarterback. I might have been a little wrong on Kirk Cousins. Because you watch him play these 10 a.m. games, you look at his stat lines, you go, this guy's probably better than we're giving him credit for. And then over the years, I've either watched him in big games, like that happened, a couple weeks ago on the Sunday night game against the Cowboys against Cooper Rush. And then the 49er game. Both teams are 5-5. It's basically an early playoff game. Whoever won that game was going to be in the driver's seat for one of the wild card spots. There basically would be a shoe-in. It'd be hard for them not to make a wild card, whoever won this game. And I've been saying over and over, I think Kirk Cousins is a better player than Jimmy Garoppolo. And then I'm watching that game. I obviously want the 49ers to win. And beside maybe the first quarter, I wasn't scared about against Kirk Cousins at all. And as the game went on, I went, I think this guy's going to lose the game. And anytime in professional sports, but you could argue in any situation, for most human beings, our biggest purchase is always going to be where we live, our home, like relative to our income, right? Now, if you're a business owner, it might be purchasing other businesses. But for most people, like you purchase a home, it's going to be a lot of your money, especially nowadays with, you know, home prices, especially if you're trying to move to the suburbs, up, 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 cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. I keep waiting for them to dip. They ain't dipping. That you put all this money in, you better like where you live. You better not only enjoy it, you better feel comfortable in it because you're going to spend a lot of time there, especially if you're working from home nowadays. And when you purchase a quarterback, and that's what the Minnesota Vikings did, they gave him $85 million. Then they had him for a couple years, and they gave him $66 million. So over like a five-year span, Cousins will have made over $150 million to be the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings. That is a lot of money. That's a lot of money in any sport, but in the NFL with the quarterback, the salary cap, all of your chips are in the middle of the table. And if all your chips are going to be in the middle of the table on a quarterback, you better feel confident that he can beat any team at any moment. Because if he can't, you feel like you're wasting money. And watching Cousins yesterday, just short circuit, there was a play. And for a split second, I thought they were going to run a trick play, and then it's pretty clear they weren't. In a big moment, late in the game, he lined up over the guard. And he just feels like he short circuits. His body language is atrocious. He made one of the worst picks of the day yesterday, threw it right to a 49er linebacker. Their guys are wide open all game long. Jefferson is easily a top two or three wide receiver in the league. Thielen's one of the better possession wide receivers of like the last two decades. And he just couldn't slice and dice a defensive secondary, which is not good. They can't cover a soul. And you just went, you guys signed up for this. And then you guys doubled down on this. And I think they were just okay with living in the middle. And that's basically what they are. They win a game, they lose a game. They win a game, they lose a game. And people like me are like, you know, I think they are actually better than the narrative that's out there. This, I watch them. Well, yeah, I watch them against random teams. Even their divisional opponents, you're more comfortable with that, especially at home. They beat the Packers. But whenever it matters, in a Sunday night game, in a Monday night game, in a big-ass game against Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers, where in theory you should have the other quarterback, you and Jimmy were the same. And Jimmy's as average as the day is long. But the difference in Jimmy and Kirk Cousins is Jimmy makes millions of dollars less than Cousins. Jimmy got $70 million guaranteed from the Niners. Cousins more than doubled that over his 5 years with the Vikings. And the other thing is the 49ers know, they're like, you know, Jimmy has a ceiling. We have to go all in on Trey Lance. Now, is that going to work? Who knows? But at least they acknowledged it. Like, this is not a long-term solution to go with Cousins and do this. Even though once upon a time, Kyle wanted to do this. That was the best thing that ever happened to the 49ers. That Jimmy got traded to him, and they avoided that because they would have given him that money, and it would have been a mistake. Because when Kirk Cousins is your quarterback, and we'll find out Dak's going to be put to the test over the next several years, You have limitations, and you're just not win big games. Period, point blank, end of story. Brandon Staley and the Chargers. One thing as I've aged that I truly believe in, just because you gain more of it as you get older, is experience really matters. And when you're young and in your 20s and you think you should make more, whatever job you have, and you think every boss you work for is an idiot, and when you're, you know, even younger and you're living with your parents, you think they're morons, you realize the older you get, you're like, God, they had some points. God, they were kind of right on that. Man, I kind of learned a life lesson on that one. And the more experience you have, the more times you have when you go through tough times or face a little adversity, you can resort back to, hey, I've been there before. Hey, that happened to me before. Or I remember when that shitty thing happened to me and I got through it. You know what? The sun comes up the next day. This is what I did in this situation. It didn't work. Maybe I should try this. Or this is what I did in this situation and it worked. I should do that again. It's why when you talk to older people, you can always gain some wisdom. Especially older, successful people that have been around the block. In any business you work in, it always behooves you to pick the brain of people that have had success in your industry. And Brandon Staley gets a lot of hype, right? The media loves Brandon Staley. And he gives a great soundbite. And he's a very, very intelligent guy. And he's given some great soundbites this year on some of the Gruden stuff and over the years on run game stuff. He's an impressive individual. But as a coach, when you get into situations, you need things to lean back on. And when you look at Brandon Staley's resume, for example, younger coaches in the NFL right now, Sean McVay is like my age. He's like 36. Sean McVay has been in the NFL since he was 22 years old. He has done every single job in the league. He's now worked for, you know, three different organizations. He's been a quality control guy. He's been a position coach, quarterback, tight end, wide receiver. He's been a coordinator, and now he's been a head coach for 5 years. Kyle Shanahan, another guy that got hired when he was really young, has been in the NFL for like 15 years. He was in the NFL in the mid-2000s, working as position coaches, then working his way up as coordinators, and then been coordinators at several spots. And now he's still a young coach, and he's only been a head coach for 5 years. But he can, you know, resort back to him and McVay. Oh, I remember when John Gruden did this. I remember when Gary Kubiak did this. I remember when we went through this in Washington. Brandon Staley got hired in the NFL in 2016. And before that, he was a lifetime small school guy. Now, I've worked at a small school. I worked at Fresno State. Just because you're at a small school does not mean you're a bad coach or a good coach, right? I was at Fresno State. I worked with some position coaches there that would have been upgrades when I was in the NFL. And vice versa, right? You can find good coaches in high school. You can find them in college. You can find them in the NFL. But I do think whatever sport you're in, like when you've worked in college football for 25, 30 years, you feel very comfortable as things change or as things adapt, changing with them because you've seen it all. No different than Belichick or Andy Reid or Sean Payton, these guys that have been, Belichick's been in the league for 50 years. But Andy Reid, the Sean Payton, some of these coaches, Pete Carroll, they've been around the NFL since the early 90s. They have so much experience with players, with schemes, with situations. Brandon Staley's team is kind of in shambles. And one, I think he's a little over his head. He was a coordinator in the NFL for one season. For one season. And he did a good job, right? But he didn't have to worry about anything else because Sean McVay was a head coach and the coordinator on the other side of the ball. He just had to coordinate the defense. And they were really good. Well, he then becomes a head coach. And listen, you know, Kyle and McVay did this. But Kyle and McVay were coordinators for a long period of time. Especially Kyle. For a decade. Maybe a little less than that. But then when you take over the team, which is very, very intense, which is a lot to handle, he's only been in the league 5 years, and now things start kind of going haywire. Well, their defense is not very good. Well, he's the defensive coordinator. So if their defense is going to be very good, that's on him. Well, now Justin Herbert is also struggling. Well, what's he supposed to do? He's not an offensive coach. He's not the offensive play caller. So now it feels like things start to snowball, and his lack of experience kind of hurts him. I don't really know what he does. You know, in terms of like how he fixes this problem. So I think sometimes we love the shiny new toy and the media is obsessed when people give good sound bites because that's their job. And Brandon Staley does. But I think when you look at him in a vacuum from a coaching perspective, you can go, you know, he's in a pretty tough situation. He's been in the league, you know, basically a half decade. He only worked for one, you know, he worked, Vic Fangio put him on the map. Well, Vic Fangio was defensive coordinator the whole time he was working for him. And then with Sean McVay, we really just saw him in 1 year situation. He had a good year. But it's a pretty small sample size. And now things start snowballing in the wrong direction with the Chargers. What does he have to lean back on? How does he help his star young quarterback who continues to struggle? I don't know how he does that. Well, the problem is he has to focus on his defense, which is really struggling, which is his baby, because he's the play caller. And now it feels like it's just kind of overwhelming. And I think we anointed this guy because he's really impressive, but he's really, it's not going that great. And I think we have to look at it and go, you know, this guy doesn't have that much experience. His learning curve might be a little steeper than we thought. Okay, let's dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is the Instagram. Got a little blue check mark. No big deal. I think someone at Fox Sports did that for me. I didn't actually get it like verified by myself, but I think they're giving verifications away pretty easily now. But, you know, let's dive in. AJ, newer listener here. I'm a hometown Lions fan, but I live in Kansas City. If you were to implant Mahomes, the coaching staff, and front office of the Chiefs to the Lions with the current ownership structure, do you think they would be successful? Or do you think they would be elongated rebuild? Thanks for the question, boss. Appreciate that. Looks like you have a good-looking dog, too. I would say, they wouldn't win that many games this year because the team's pretty terrible. But if Dan Campbell's going to go one, let's just assume he wins a game, 1-15-1 would be their record. I would say Andy and Mahomes would win 6. They've been in a lot of games. And, you know, so Andy would win 6, and by the second year, they'd be a wild card team. So, yeah. I mean, those guys are too good. You give them Andy and Mahomes, like, they would overcome the Ford family. And listen, I come from, my dad was a farmer, drove Ford trucks. Do they still? My brother drive one? I think he does. No, I don't even know if he does anymore. But I was a Ford guy. My first car was a Ford Explorer, 94. Drove that bad boy in high school. When did I get my license? 2002, 2001. Thing was, you know, pretty shitty. It's my grandpa's old car. But it got the job done. Put in a couple subwoofers. Thought I was sweet. My dad could hear me, you know, about 15, probably about 7 miles away. I'd just be just slumping. The whole neighborhood could hear me, actually. I think I got a 15 in sub. Thing pounded. What do you think the Rams settlement with the city of St. Louis? $790 million seems like an exorbitant amount, even for Kroenke. I haven't read that much up on it, but I'm with you. It seems like an astronomical amount of money. It's pretty clear. I'm not a lawyer, just a couple state school degrees, that they broke a contract that was pretty binding, and he knew what he was doing. And I think he didn't care. And I think we're all like this sometimes. Obviously not on that level of wealth, but just, listen, I want to do this. I'll figure out the cost later. And when you get that rich, how often does Stan Kroenke hear no? He does whatever the hell he wants to do whenever he wants to do it. So maybe he just thought they could figure it out. I pay my lawyer so much. Worst case scenario, I give him $30, $40 million. But that is not the way this played out. $790 million is a lot of cash. It's going to get ugly with him in the league because he is not what I don't think the radicals, I call them the radicals, the wackos, and the quacks that just, you know, the tax the rich and never stop screaming about money. People don't realize, like, even Elon Musk, I know he sold some stock recently. Like, they don't just have billions of dollars in cash sitting in a savings account. And you'd never be dumber to do that right now because you'd be losing money at an astronomical rate. But these guys, their money, even a guy like Kroenke, is in businesses. It's tied up. Now, he might have $50 million in cash, maybe. Even that. Like, I would be shocked if some of these guys, now, through their businesses, have cash flow coming in. But I think these, and it's very political to be like, oh, just tax the rich. He's got billions of dollars. Yes, in stock, in company valuations. They don't just have cash in their bank account. Now, they don't have $10,000 in their checking account, but they don't have like $120 million either. So a guy like Kroenke, you know, if he was going to write a $790 million check, like, he would have to sell some shit. Now, luckily, he'd be able to do that. Like, me and you would not. But he does not just have $790 million sitting in a bank account. You know, nobody does. I think that's one of the narratives that goes on like, social media. That it's just, and especially the media, it's just how clueless they are about being around wealthy people. And I don't know anyone that's like has that level of money, but rich people do not just have an unlimited amount of cash sitting in bank accounts. You invest it, or you put it in the business, you put it in buildings, you put it in apartments, you do something with it. It doesn't just sit there. Not that level of money. How soon do you think Lincoln Riley can turn USC around? As a text I got today from an insider, someone in the biz, they think he's going to have a record transfer portal of just people flowing in. I could see 5 or 6 players from Oklahoma transferring. I could see some sweet recruits in LA decommitting and coming. I think they could be good right away. And when I say good, like 8-9 wins next year, and by year 2, competing for a playoff spot. Now, Utah's good, and they're going to be better next. They're going to be good next year. And Mario, Oregon's recruited really well. So they think their team's going to be good the next couple years. Now, they got to get better quarterback play than they had this year. But to me, Lincoln's a better coach than Mario. Whittingham's a big-time coach, but he coaches at Utah. And it's just hard to, he's just not getting the same caliber of players. Now, he has beat, USC for a decade, right? He's beat them several times. And hell, he beat Oregon a couple weeks ago. Like, he can beat the big boys. One thing Utah is, they ain't scared of shit, which I respect. Coming from Fresno State, we had the same type mindset. Now, they're a higher level program now that they've gone into the Pac-12. But when you have the coach that just like looks at everyone like an equal, but has this underdog mentality and can coach, like Whittingham is not going to be intimidated by Lincoln Riley. Now, neither's Mario, but Mario can't outcoach him. Whittingham might be able to. Mario might just be able to out-talent him early on, but that gap will close fast. I would say by year 3, USC is going to be just stacked. I mean, they're going to look like Ohio State or Alabama, would be my guess. Hey, John, my boyfriend is a big fan. You've answered a question of his before, and we sat down and watched it together. It was cool. Who would you hire as the next Oklahoma head coach? I saw Bob Stoops get pretty fired up today. I wonder if he'd get the itch and just kind of help them the next couple years before they get in the SEC. I wonder if they do that. I wonder if he'd do that. Now, would they hire his brother Mark? If you're going to hire his brother Mark, why not just hire Bob? Now, would they hire Matt Campbell or Dave Aranda? I think those guys would make a lot of sense. I could see that. Like, it's Oklahoma. They would get a sweet, sweet candidate. I had a DM. Someone asked me, like, what do you think about Urban Meyer? Would Oklahoma, maybe it was on Twitter, like over Notre Dame. Oklahoma cares about character. Think about their last two coaches. Lincoln Riley, super high character guy. And obviously Bob Stoops, just beyond salt of the earth human being. Urban Meyer's a low character guy. Great coach, low character. Like, that's the evidence is in. And I'm not talking about the bar with the women. I'm talking about his history at Ohio State and Florida. It speaks for itself. Elite coach, questionable human. Oklahoma ain't touching him. Notre Dame ideally wouldn't want to touch him either, but, they like winning. They love football. Touchdown Jesus. So I can see Notre Dame, and, it was always a dream job. He was assistant coach there a long time ago. My guess for Oklahoma would be Bob Stoops, Matt Campbell, or Dave Aranda. Happy Thanksgiving. My quick thought. Recruiting is a college thing, but in some ways it's done in the NFL. Do you think if Urban can use his great recruiting skills to get free agents to Jacksonville? Love the pod. Edible thoughts. Love a good edible. I would say it's so much different in the pros, because I can recruit a guy and I can sell him on my vision, but if I'm offering him a 2-year contract at $20 million, and, I'm just throwing out a random team. The Minnesota Vikings are offering him 3 years and $35 million. It doesn't matter what I can recruit. The other thing, differentiating factor in recruiting in the pros, like, your team has to be good. It's why the Patriots, the Rams got Odell Beckham, the Packers have landed some guys over the years. Like, if you're good, then yeah, maybe you get a guy on a little cheaper because he wants to win. Especially an older player that's already won, already made money. What can Urban offer you? Like, we're going to lose? To me, Urban just has to offer the most money. I have a hard time seeing Urban sticking around. I really do. Now, I don't know exactly where he'd go, but looks like you were right about Cam again. He can really not throw the damn ball. I don't think I was right. We all saw it. He couldn't throw last year. I mean, he just couldn't throw. I actually gained a lot of respect for him over the last year and a half. What he did, just how much if Belichick likes you, I respect you. But he can't throw. He can't play quarterback.
Can you please talk about the officiating in the Raiders-Cowboy game? Maybe I'm biased as a Cowboy fan, but it seems like the Raiders are getting some crazy calls in their favor. The officiating this season has been an embarrassment. But as I've said over and over and over again, that officiating in that game, I think there were like 14 calls. Was there like 28 total penalties? I forget. I mean, I was having a few pops. It was Thanksgiving. And, you know, there were a ton of PI calls. It was the most watched game in the history of football. So Roger Goodell is, what's he going to say? He's going to go, I have 38 million people. Do you think I care that Zay Jones got a PI call? I do not. Do you think I care that my referees are blinder than a bat and can't make a consistent call and sustain just some normalcy on a week-to-week basis to save their lives? I do not give a shit. I pay them a nominal fee, and they're happy because they make a couple hundred grand, and they screw up games constantly. Coaches despise them. Players don't really respect them. And most of them aren't good at their job. And in fairness to them, if they're referees listening, it is a difficult job. But if the job's difficult, but you can't constantly get every call wrong. And they just basically get every call wrong all the time. But the league office does not care. So, yeah, I mean, I could see being a Cowboy fan questioning some of the calls. But I think Raider fans would tell you there's not a bigger conspiracy group of the officials are out to get you. And I know I did Raiders postgame for about 3 years than the Oakland Raider fans. I guess the Vegas fans now. But most of their core group are Oakland Raider fans. They led the league in penalties for, like, I think, 5 decades. Hell, they might still lead the league in penalties. I haven't checked the updated penalty rankings. But when I was doing it, they had led the league for like 15 straight years. So they always thought they were getting screwed. A couple years ago, remember, they were playing the Cowboys. I think it was Desitor, or I don't even know. Maybe it was Boger. Used the index card. That really pissed them off. Question, mailbag from British Columbia, Canada. Went there once. I've been there multiple times. I got to say, it's pretty badass. I went to Whistler. I went to Vancouver. It does not suck. If you ever need a vacation recommendation, need somewhere to go, you live in the States, check out Vancouver. Incredible city. If you like to ski or you like to just hang out and drink at a bar in the snow, go to Whistler, Canada. Place is also badass. While watching many of the top quarterback performances this year, it became very clear that dominant offensive line play and the ability to work from the pocket were the main success factors. It often feels like Brady and Rodgers can hang in the pocket for ages while guys like Trevor Lawrence under pressure escaping most every play. How much of the ability to remain calm in the pocket do you attribute to the offensive line play, and how much of the quarterback's awareness feet in the pocket? P.S. Rosen, what a Rosen sighting the other day. Painful. Yeah, I think he came in through a pick six. That's a hell of a question. And I think the hardest part about evaluating quarterbacks, beside throwing, attempts, yardage, right, arms, you can tell arm strength, it's impossible to quantify the eyes and the feet. And listen, Tom Brady gets rid of the ball really fast. He also knows exactly where he wants to go with the ball. So when he snaps the football, he knows precisely where what all 11 guys are doing on his side. I guess 10, because he knows what he's doing. But most importantly, he knows what all 11 guys are doing on defense. And I think a lot of times with younger quarterbacks, like I don't think Trevor Lawrence is a puss. Like, I don't think he's scared. I just don't really think he knows what's going on, because most young players do not know what's going on. Aaron Rodgers has been in the NFL since 2015 or 2005. And for 2.5 years, he was around Jeff Tedford, one of the best college coaches of his generation. So the knowledge that Aaron Rodgers and Brady have from their coaching staffs over the years and film study and just experience is infinitely higher than a guy like that. And they're really talented. Two of the greatest, I mean, Brady and Rodgers, probably two top five quarterbacks of all time. Brady's one, Aaron's like 5 or 6. So I think a lot of it is knowing what to do. And then Rodgers is more, you know, athletic. He can kind of smoothly slide, where Brady has to get rid of the ball. But I think most young quarterbacks, where I think people question, like, are they scared? I truly think, like, I saw Trevor Lawrence truck people in college. I don't think he's scared. I just don't think he knows what the hell is going on. Zach Wilson, I think they just freak out. Like, you saw moments in that game against, I think Derek is a guy, Carr, that gets, you know, criticized sometimes for not sticking in the pocket. When he knows what's going on, right, when he truly understands the defense, and when he gets in a rhythm like he did against the Cowboys, he's sliding up in the pocket and making great plays. So I think the older you get as a quarterback, you can get in these rhythms in a game where you feel like, I know everything they're throwing at me. Because my study, my preparation, and then like what I'm seeing on the field, you just feel very, very comfortable. And then you feel comfortable with what your offensive line's doing. I think experience and comfort level. Now you got to have the prerequisite of toughness, and not everyone has it at quarterback. And I've said this over and over. I think it's one of the most underrated aspects of a quarterback. People keep getting mad at me like, Middlecoff, give Mac Jones his flowers. I do think he's dinking and dunking a little bit, but that's what his offense, asked for. Here's why I will give him a ton of credit. I have seen that kid, and he's a kid, he's 22 years old, get the shit kicked out of him several times this season. Get destroyed. I mean, I've seen him a couple times get sandwiched by defensive linemen. He hops right back up every time. Do you know the thing I've not heard one person talk about with Mac Jones that I bet Belichick and Josh McDaniels love about him? He is tough as nails. And when you're tough at quarterback, you got a chance. Because Mac is not the most skilled guy. Now, his pocket presence and his eyes, they're all good. He is not scared. And he will hang in there for that extra second, where that's what Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson will not do. Trey Lance, hard to even judge. He only played the one game. Who's the other guy? Fields, he's kind of caught in between because his offensive line is so shitty. And he's a runner, but he's going to have to learn that. Because part of being a good quarterback in the NFL, can you sit for that extra split second when Von Miller, when Aaron Donald, when a Bosa brother, when Cam Hayward, when some big motherfucker is a foot away from you, coming full speed, gonna bury you into the turf or the grass, and you know it, but you need to wait for that last split second for your guy to get that step and for you to get that first down, for you to get that, drive-clinching touchdown. Can you do that? And listen, I couldn't. I'd be terrified. Who wants to get thrown to the ground? But that's why quarterbacks, they say get all the money and get all the girls when you're good. You could argue you don't even need to be that good. Blake Bortles probably pulled. With work and school, I can't watch YouTube, but please keep doing Shave It or Save It. It's a segment we did on my other podcast, Shave It or Save It. Send me a DM with your hair. And if you think you should shave it or you think you should keep it, it's a question that all of us guys have. Right. I went through it. I was balding in my mid-20s and I shaved my head probably at, I guess I would have been 27 or 28 years old. But I was balding. I remember being at Cal Poly, probably 23, and seeing hair follicles on my desk at Fresno State. I was losing my hair. It sucks. So shave it or save it. It's just we're going to try to change the world. I'm a big fan of the pods. Thanks for taking time to read my question in advance. What is your impression of Matt Rhule's job in Carolina? Do you think he could bolt back to college? I think Notre Dame would be all over, and I think Oklahoma would be all over. I forget about him. Here's Matt Rhule's problem. Like Ron Rivera, how do you get a quarterback? They tried, and I commended him. I supported them. Go get Sam Darnold. Second-round pick, do it. He's an undervalued asset. Turns out he stinks. Then they got P.J. Walker, who's an AAF guy, and Cam Newton, who can't throw. How is he going to get a quarterback? If I was Oklahoma, I would call Matt Rhule. That's what I would do. He's a guy that I don't think about enough. Same with Notre Dame. Obviously, the Browns have got to be frustrated with Baker Mayfield. I think re-signing him would be dooming themselves for another several seasons. One idea I had was that if they just let Baker walk in free agency and drafted Bailey Zapp, late second or early third round. Not sure how much college football you've scouted this draft so far, but he's a quarterback with a very similar skill set, broke FCS passing records at Houston Baptist, and led Western Kentucky to the Conference USA title game this coming weekend. I know it's unorthodox in today's NFL not to spend a top 10 pick or $40 million a year on a quarterback, but this would ensure they have the space to extend Chubb. Maybe bring back Kareem or secure the O-line as well as patch up the defense. I'll be honest, I haven't scouted Western Kentucky or Houston Baptist, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Draft a guy in the third, fourth round, Case Keenum, and maybe you're just, what the hell's the difference? Because this version of Baker is not very good. Now, he's injured, he's a shell of himself, but he's small. So why wouldn't he get injured for years to come? I saw Stefanski say today that he's getting healthier. I don't know.
I mean, the Ravens scored 16 points through four picks and you couldn't win. That was a bad loss for the Browns. The Ravens threw four interceptions. I mean, Lamar did. Four interceptions. You get four interceptions, I think you got to win the game. I just, like, you have to win that game. And they didn't. So I would not sign him. But I think he'll be on the team next year, fifth year option. And then we'll kind of go from there. Appreciate everyone DMing me. Appreciate everyone listening to the show. Share it with your friends. Enjoy the week. And I'll talk to everyone Friday. Adios.
Volume.